Exhibition number 21626, Reel 1.
Joe Eakins, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Yeldon.
Where?
Yeldon.
Where's that?
That's a village about 8 miles from here. It's actually in Bedfordshire, not in Northamptonshire, but it's just over the border.
Which year was this?
Which year?
Yes.
1923.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Bedfordshire?
At Risley, another village in Bedfordshire.
Which school did you go to there?
Risley, well, Church of England School, they were in those days.
How old were you when you finished there?
14.
So that must have been 37.
I suppose so, yes.
Did you get a job?
Yes, in Rushden, in a shoe factory.
And is that what you were doing when war was declared?
Yes.
Had you joined TA before the war?
No.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes.
Under what circumstances?
I don't remember.
How did you feel about the news?
I don't think it. I don't think it struck home at all. It was just something that had happened.
Did the war affect you at first?
Yes, in that. I was what, 16 when it started, was I? Something like that. And you became a bit, I don't know the word, unrestful, you know. There was an armoured unit billeted around the area, so there were tanks floating around. And I eventually joined the Home Guard, and I don't know, it was a strange time, you know. You felt that it was going to be all over soon. If you didn't get there, you'd miss it. You know, when you're that age, you're looking for a bit of excitement, aren't you? And I think there was that to it. So as soon as I could, I volunteered.
What kind of experience did you have in the Home Guard?
No army experience at all, really. It was a waste of time. We used to go up to the railway line with a big stick, two of you, and walk up and down the railway line looking for paratroopers to drop, which was a bit silly, really.
Is this in Russian?
In Russian. Yeah, the railway runs about a mile outside Russian. And we used to go up there and patrol up there for a couple of hours, meet down at the hall. One of the shoe factory bosses was a lieutenant colonel, I think. I don't know how he got his rank, I don't know. He certainly didn't know anything any more than we did, you know. And it was a farcical thing, really.
So you didn't have any firearms experience?
No. Not while I was there. I think I eventually did, but I didn't stop very long.
Any bombing in Rushden?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Can you describe that, please?
We were bombed in Russia about three or four times, I think. I remember the bombing of Coventry, because we could see from our houses the fires in Coventry and in the sky. And it was about that time I was out one evening. I think I was going to night school, and walking down the street, and all of a sudden there was this big whistle, and I ducked under the pavement, and a bomb dropped somewhere in Rushden, and not close to where I was. But that then again, and I didn't know anything about the other time they dropped some bombs which landed on the school in the middle of the day, but I don't know where I was. I certainly weren't here. So that was about the one experience of the bombing that I got.
Can you tell me about joining up, please?
Yes. As I say, as soon as I could, then I volunteered. And I had to go to Bedford to sign on, and I volunteered for the tanks, because again, I'd seen these tanks around here, I think, and you're impressionable, and so I volunteered for the tanks, and was accepted, and posted to Bovington training camp, which was, well, they were all volunteers at Bovington. It was the tank place where they took the volunteers, and it was a 6 months training. And it didn't take me very long to realise that I'd never be a good soldier, in the army sense of being a soldier. I just couldn't stand the waste of time and effort and doing things that had got no bearing on anything, as far as I could see. I enjoyed the training, the actual training, the driving, the gunnery, the wireless. I enjoyed that, but to put it plainly, I couldn't stand the bullshit. You know, I mean, why you should paint stones white and I'd been trained. While I was still a civvy, I told you I worked in a shoe factory, and I was a clicker. A clicker's a bloke who cuts the skins into the shapes to be made into the shoes. And my limited ambition then was that I would be a foreman and that I'd have a little car. And to achieve this, I started going to evening school. And that was while we lived at Yeldon still. So I used to bike in. I used to bike into work because I worked in Rushden. Bike home and then bike back in the evening to go to the school. And I'd started to take a little bit of management training, as well as learning the practical part of shoe training. And of course, when I got in the army, I don't think I'd ever heard of man management. In fact, I don't think they have now. I saw a programme on the television a fortnight ago, and God, they treat them worse than they did, if that's possible, when I were in. Anyway, as I say, I soon realised that I weren't going to be a very good soldier in that sense. I just couldn't see the point of all the stuff we were doing. I mean, we spent 6 months training, and I reckon that a month of that 6 months was valuable. All this rubbish about it's supposed to make you in action, so you do things in the way you should do them quickly. It's a load of rubbish, absolute rubbish. I mean, it never must. I think that as regards fighting the war, I think I were a good soldier. But I, the training that I got didn't do anything towards it. Or not only the training, when you got to the to yourself. Now, because I went to Farmington, and because we were volunteers and that, a lot of the people went on to become to Octave. Quite a big, when I say a lot of them, a proportion of the intake. So everybody had the opportunity to go there, and we all had an interview. I had an interview, and the first question they asked me was, could I afford the mess fees? And I said, how much are the mess fees? And they said, oh, no, in hundreds. And I mean, no way could I afford anything like that. So I mean, whatever, that finished me straight away as regards that, you know. But there was another advantage in being there, and that was, it was the one training regiment that at the end of your training, providing the regiments had vacancies and were in this country, you could choose which regiment you'd like to go to. So because of that, I chose the Northamptonshire Yeomanry, and were lucky enough to get into it.
When you were at Bovington, were you punished because of your attitude?
Not serious punishment, but I got behind, marching behind the guard and this sort of thing, you know. All right, because for simple little things like you haven't got your what do you call them, the things you stitch on your coat.
Shoulder flash?
Yeah, your flashes weren't wide enough or, you know, or stupid little things like that. Or when you had your kit inspections, you know, instead of putting your toothbrush at that angle, you'd got it a little bit another angle. And because of that, right, you got 3 nights behind the guard, and because when you went behind the guard, if you got another inspection and you were still, some extra nights behind the guard because you didn't come up to the scratch. And another thing that always bugged me was that in those days I was black. I had really black hair and a real black beard. And I could shave in the morning at 6 o'clock and go on parade and get 3 days behind the guard for not shaving. Regular, you know. But although they knew that, in fact, I had shaved, it didn't make any difference. You're still, you know, and that sort of thing that bugged me as well. Anyway, I soon realised that the best thing I could do was to keep my head down and do the things I like doing, and you could do that. And there were ways of getting out of the way and missing out on the things you didn't like. And
what ways?
Well, lots of ways. You know, you could volunteer for different things which kept you off of the things that you didn't like doing. And there were ways of not at the training regiment, but later on there were ways of going absent without anybody knowing you were absent, and providing you didn't stay away too long, and all sorts of tricks, you know. And if you went on a route march, and that used Well, that were another thing that I didn't see any point on. I didn't see any point of marching for miles and miles and miles while I was going to drive a tank, you know, or ride in a tank. And the sort of thing that I wasn't the only one. Don't think, I mean, my mate, we used to go on route march and we used to nip off behind the edge when we got going and pick the route march up on the way back. There were all loads of sort of things like that that you could do that eased the burden. But I could never really get into it. Another time we were billeted at Barry Snedman's in a big park, and we've got the tanks all stuck all around this park, you know. So at night, two of you, used to go on guard and march around all night guarding all these tanks, you know, just two of you, and absolutely ridiculous. You know, but why should you do it? You know, and you're here, and I mean, the park was miles big, and I mean, what I used to do, quite frankly, and again, I got caught and stuck down the guard for it. You know, when you say tank sheets, so when you got your gun stuck up like that, and you got the tank sheet on, the sheet used to hang down like that, each side of the gun, and it was just ideal to get in and go to sleep. So we very often used to, when we're on guard, just nip in there, and it was unfortunate if you got caught, you know, if the officer on charge come around and caught you, you know. But that was that, and also the differences between the treatment that the different ranks got, you know, which again, I'm a bit of a socialist, I don't know, but to see the differences in the treatment that you got as a ordinary bloke, as a sergeant, or as an officer was, to my mind, was way out. So that really, it came to it that all I would do was serve my time and doing as little as I could and keep my head down and waiting to get out and get home.
What speciality were you trained to do in the tanks?
I was trained as a second. I passed a gunner in 1943. I passed a driver operator in 1944.
Which job did you like doing best?
Well, I was not a very good mechanic. I liked driving, but I didn't like the mechanical part of looking after maintenance and all that sort of thing. So I became a gunner operator.
Operating what?
Wireless. A gunner operator was you operate either the gun or the radio, whichever you were settled on. But you were trained as you were trained as either a gun operator, a driver operator. You were trained in two things really, although actually you trained in the lot. As I saw, I passed my driving, so you know I could drive and. But I ended up as a gunner operator, I ended up as a gunner. Oh, well, that was before D-Day.
So when you got to Northamptonshire Yeomanry, was it any better?
Oh, yes. The service regiments were a lot more. One thing at the train regiment, you had to run everywhere, you know. Which again, I thought was stupid, you know. But when you got to the service regiments, it was much, much better. In fact, so much that I arrived in the afternoon, we were given a train pass and sent to the regiment. There were, I think, about three of us from the train regiment to the yeomanry, and they worked Ogbourne St George in Swindon, near Swindon. And we arrived in the afternoon, and I was sent to A squadron, and the others went to some other squadron, I don't know. And I arrived and went into the squadron office, and met by the squadron sergeant major, who said, "What the hell do you want?" You know, usual way. And I told him I'd been posted and whatnot, and he said, "Yeah, hey, you better have this." And he gave me a ticket for a Gracie Hill concert, which were on that night. So I thought, well, that's pretty good. That's certainly better than the training regiment. But no, it was a much more comfortable life. Again, there was still a lot of stupid bullshit and whatnot, waste of time. But we were putting the bit of training that we'd done into practice. And we started going out on exercises and that sort of thing. And that was quite good. I quite enjoyed that. Particularly, well, we went on a week's exercise and we got knocked out after about an hour, the first hour. So we had a week's holiday. We just parked at... There's a model village just out in Buckinghamshire somewhere. We were there anyway, so we just parked a tank on the side of the road and had a week on the road, just sat there. So, you know.
Did you get yourselves knocked out deliberately to have the holiday?
Oh, no. How we got knocked out, nobody knows. I mean, the umpire used to come along and say, "You're out," you know, and that, you never knew what. Why, or and certainly none of the officers knew why. That was something else, you know. Nobody knew what was happening, and it was even worse when we went abroad.
What were your other movements in England before you went abroad?
What were
your other movements in England?
We moved around. We changed tanks, and we changed. Again, I can't think of words. My memory's not what it was. The job that we were supposed to do was changed, and this sort of thing. In fact, at one stage, which frightened me to death, they said we were going to have Bren gun carriers instead of tanks. They were going to take the tanks away, and we were going to have Bren gun carriers. I didn't fancy that, to tell you the truth. We started off with Valentine tanks, and then we changed to Matildas. And it changed over the period, and it was a long period, I mean, 3 or 4 years, wasn't it, of just training and waiting. And we moved around. We were at Swindon, we were at Gloucester, we were Bury St Edmunds, various parts of the country. But none of it changed my opinion of the army as a waste of time. We nobody knew what were going. Everybody were having as good a time as they could, and some were able to have much better times than others. You know, we used to do all sorts of things. We played crib one weekend. We started on Thursday and we packed up on Tuesday, playing crib all that time. One bloke having a couple of hours kip and moving back into the game. And surprising at the end of that time, I ended up with just about the same money as I started with. All sorts of things like that. Anything that made life bearable. And depending where we were, you used to get trucks into the... I'll go and just get trucks into Swindon and so you could get in the house pretty often, get the pictures and horse dances and that sort of thing.
Yeah. How did you feel about going abroad?
Well, we'd had a lot of training and we were supposed to know what was happening, but nobody knew what it was like at all. When we got there, it was totally different to anything that you'd been ever thought it was going to be like, frankly. By this time, you'd just accepted that you were there and that writ, and you were going to go abroad and eventually, and that the quicker it finished, the quicker you'd get home if you ever got home. It didn't really bother you too much. And then, of course, we got our Shermans, which were the tanks we went into action with. We didn't realise, nobody told you anything, you didn't know anything. And in fact, I don't think I even realised, the officer, I'm sure they didn't, how vulnerable the Shermans were against the German tanks, or like the ones that we'd got then. But luckily, of course, they brought out the Firefly, which was a Sherman, but with the 17-pounder on. And they brought it out just in time, so that a month before D-Day, we got one per troop. And for some good reason, I don't know why, but they gave it to me. And we went to the Rangers, and I fired 5 shots. And that's all I fired out of before we went abroad. And again, it frightened me to death. We've got 75 millimetres on the normal Sherman, and you got a bit of a flash and whatnot when you fired it and whatnot. But when I fired a 17-pounder, I didn't like it. Whoosh, and a whacking great flame come out the back, and woof, at the top of the turret. Took my eyebrows off with it as it went. And, so it was really something. But, as I say, I fired five rounds out of it, that's all, before we went abroad. And then we went down.
You mean it literally burnt your eyebrows off?
Yeah, oh yeah, the flame that come out of the back was enormous. In fact, I'll tell you a bit later on, but another bit about that. From there, of course, we went to Gosport, or somewhere near Gosport, where we had to waterproof the tanks. And we moved down there, we weren't told anything about anything happening, but it was obvious what was happening. We were moving down there ready for it. And we were put into little prison camps, really. So you were there and that way you couldn't get out or go anywhere. And as I say, we had to waterproof the tanks and play cards, really. That was about all you could do. In fact, just before we went, they gave us some French money, or not French money, the, what do they call it?
Scrip?
No, invasion money. It was French, but English ones, given to they gave us that, so most of us lost that before we even went over. And then eventually D-Day started, and we moved down and down and down till we got closer and closer to the coast, or to the seafront anyway. And I think it was D6 when we went over.
What was the crossing like?
Bloody awful. On D2, we went in a tank landing craft with three tanks.